So to end this hour, we consider not the death of books, but their afterlife. That is, what to do with a book that no one is ever likely to read again. You could pulp it, of course, but there are other options. For instance, when a book's useful life ends, maybe it could finish up by essentially playing a book. What I mean is, maybe it could land in the hands of a team of bibliotriage artists who make a living prolonging the shelf life of books that have long outgrown their readers. Bob explains.
In a former post office sorting center in Frederick, Maryland, this is the sound of rescue. It's a packing machine sending thousands of used and unsold new books off to welcoming owners every day, sparing countless pages, the pulping machine, or the landfill. In this 3-acre warehouse, a staff of 50 labors to find new homes for the 4 million volumes that have landed on its 21 loading docks from publishers, charities, and just plain civilians downsizing or uncluttering or otherwise divesting their libraries. Chuck Roberts, founder and president of Wonder Books, shows me cartons upon cartons of the abandoned.
So what you're looking at are just boxes of what we call raw books. These books need to go and be sorted or triaged according to a pretty complex formula that's evolved here over the last 15 years since we've been on the internet. Trying to maximize the value of every book, try to get it to the right place to turn it into a nickel, a dime, a dollar. We have the retail stores where we sell books. We sell books on the internet through about 15 different selling platforms. We sell bulk books to people that send them overseas.
Oh, and one more channel. It's called Books by the Foot, a sales segment that depends not on literary depth, but on width. It was a niche Roberts discovered by tracking sales at his 3 used bookstores.
I would notice people buying books, and it turned out there were interior decorators that were buying books for clients by look or by subject, and they would buy them from us in the stores. And then I said, well, let's work around that, and then you can buy books from us less expensively than pulling them off the shelves and buy them in bulk.
Bulk? Words. Now, before you get all huffy about the commodification of culture, Roberts wants you to know his motives aren't entirely pecuniary.
These are books that we can't sell to readers or collectors, and if we can't do something with them, at a certain point, we get filled up and they have to go to bad places. So
they have to go to the farm?
Yeah, your books are going to the farm.
Does it bother you when these things get pulped?
I can't stand to destroy a viable book.
Now, you understand that they're paper and they don't have feelings.
Well, I have feelings. And also, it's financial, too. If I can turn these 400 pallets of books into, if I pay a nickel per book and I turn them into a dime, then with that kind of volume, you're talking about a little bit of money there.
But who exactly is he nickel and diming? Well, there are the TV and film sets, such as Sleepy Hollow and Hannibal and Woody Allen's Irrational Man. There are she retail stores trying to affect a certain sophistication, model homes for that lived-in look, and for that expensively educated-in look, professional offices.
There's no viable use for law books except decorative anymore. But someone rents a law office, it has a bunch of empty shelves on it, they wanted something to fill it in, then they can buy law books from us by the foot really inexpensively.
And then there are the individual homeowners who wish to project a certain bulk sophistication. Roberts remembers one customer who was furnishing a new beach mansion in Delaware via her New York interior decorator, a man, of course, called Helmut. The owners were entertaining on a Thursday. Helmut wanted a stocked library by Monday. 200 feet of solid literature rush. And he is not alone.
I think it's a really useful service.
New York interior designer Bradley Stevens.
I think that a room doesn't feel finished without books. It really does personalize a space.
Personalize, yes, but not necessarily by his clients personally. It's his job to plumb their tastes, values, aesthetics, and psychology to get just the right effect.
Even if they haven't read them, maybe it's aspirational, and maybe that's okay. Even if they're props, they are still books.
The concept of one-stop shopping is hardly new, nor the idea of showcasing your personal scope and erudition via your library. Book spines can tell your guests just what kind of individual you are, or wish to be perceived as. Let's face it, those Great Books of the Western World series didn't originate in the insatiable demand for Aristophanes. What Wonder Books pioneered is the system for recycling unwanted books, and of course, the novel metric. Hitherto, the accumulated literary output of man was not measured in linear feet. $5.99, by the way, for trade paperbacks, $350 a foot for premium leather. I asked Chuck Roberts about tape measure economics.
Let's say you get a copy of Catcher in the Rye and Night by Elie Wiesel and The Incredible Lightness of Being by Milan Kundera. These are very slender volumes, and that's three books. And one James Patterson is twice as thick.
Well, you pretty much hit the nail on the head with those titles. The first three titles you said would probably never make it to Books by the Foot because those sell too well in the secondary market. Those would go to our stores or on the internet. And the James Patterson, he is so overpopulated in the secondary market because he's so hugely successful that we probably get 10 copies of all his bestsellers for every one that we could sell as a book to a reader online for 15 cents in the store for a few dollars. So what are we going to do with the other 9 out of 10 James Patterson books that come in? We don't want to pulp them, so they'll go to Books by the Foot.
An immortal, in other words, if not of literature, then of interior decor.
He'll be on display and on people's shelves as a book-shaped object for a long time.
In a sorting area, an employee named Kelsey was putting together a custom order. I asked her about the oddest request she ever got.
I don't know that I've had too many odd ones, but we do get a lot of exotic colors, like clay and lemon yellow and lavender, things like that.
Lemon yellow. Wait, like to match the drapes? Whereupon Chuck escorts me to a large room at the back of the warehouse. Rows and rows, stacks and stacks, arranged not alphabetically, or even by the Dewey Decimal System.
Wait a second. I am in a room. Here's the signage. White and cream, earth tones, red, green. I'm a big reader. Really? What do you like to read? Orange. Is there a Sherwin Williams Prize for Literature?
No, I don't know about that.
What about the Legoization of literature? Books have been used as building blocks for furniture, art, even actual buildings. They have decent R value for exterior wall insulation, and there's always the energy sector. You know Fahrenheit 451. Those things totally burn.
I said the books, Montag! That's good. That's what I like to see.
You know what? Never mind. That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Kimmy Regler, Mira Sharma, Alana Casanova-Burgess, Jesse Brenneman, and Maitha Lee Rao. We had more help from David Conrad and Dasha Lizitsina, and our show was edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineer this week was Casey Holford.
Katya Rogers is our executive producer. Jim Schachter's WNYC's vice president for news. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
Support for On the Media comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Overbrook Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio.